is time to get up with the NFL, where these two legends will meet week one. And one of them got the biggest break of all last night. We'll tell you which in a moment. Then, one super high-profile coach says we need a major change in college football, and it's not the one you think. By the way, he's absolutely right. And don't miss the one and only Shaquille O'Neal live this morning, talking about Mike and LeBron and, candidly, anything else he wants to. All that and more on this Friday morning. As we get up with you from Bristol, Mike Greenberg is here and delighted that you are choosing to get up with us this morning on what is in every way a full-scale football Friday. And we have the whole crew ready to go to break it down right after we get up and go and bring you some other notes from around the world of sports yesterday, because we're busy. In the NBA, the Blazers, the Nuggets, and the Cavaliers all plan to reopen their facilities for individual player workouts today, the first day the teams are allowed to do so. The league will also hold an all-player call today to catch up on everything. The match is set. Champions for Charity, featuring Tiger, Phil, Tom Brady, Peyton Manning. It'll take place May 24th in Florida. According to the organizers, players will collectively make a $10 million donation to COVID-19 relief efforts. And they were very funny on the Zoom yesterday. Elsewhere, IndyCar will start its season next month in Texas with a night race, June 6th, without spectators. Texas Motor Speedway was the next race on the schedule that hadn't been postponed or canceled due to the pandemic. And now we get to business. The NFL schedule released last night, and we start with Tom Brady and the Buccaneers opening in New Orleans against Drew Brees and the Saints. It'll be the first game ever with two starting quarterbacks who are at least 40 years old. The season, however, will kick off a few days before that with the Chiefs beginning their Super Bowl defense Thursday night, September 10th, against the Texans. They also face Baltimore on Monday Night Football in Week 3. SoFi Stadium in L.A. will open with the Rams, a home game against the Cowboys. The Chargers will get their first home game 1 week later against the Chiefs. And the Las Vegas Raiders will wait till a week after that to open Allegiant Stadium. The first NFL game in Las Vegas will be Week 2 on Monday Night Football against the Saints. Commissioner Roger Goodell released a statement that says, in preparing to play the season as scheduled, we will continue to make our decisions based on the latest medical and public health advice in compliance with government regulations and with appropriate safety protocols to protect the health of our fans, players, club, and league personnel and our communities. We'll be prepared to make adjustments as necessary. So let me bring the squad in here this morning. And Dan Graziano, I'm going to start with you. Lewis Riddick and Mike Tannenbaum, of course, are here as well. But Dan, we were talking earlier this week about the different ways that the NFL could build its schedule around the possibilities of modifications. Now it's out. What did we see last night?
Yeah, you have to look a little bit harder than I expected to, but there are some things. The NFL is planning right now to start the season on time, but it acknowledges that there are circumstances, obviously, that might prevent that from happening or force adjustments. So you look, there are no division games scheduled in weeks 3 or 4. So those are weeks they could play with in theory if they had to slide the season back, start it later, or shorten it. Everybody who plays each other in week 2 has the same bye week later in the season. So if that week were to get wiped out, then you could make up those games in the appropriate bye weeks. And you know, every time they award a Super Bowl, part of the process is the city that wins the bid has to have a contingency plan in place in case the game has to be delayed. So Tampa obviously has that. So if the season had to be pushed back a few weeks, they could push the Super Bowl back as well. So even as they continue to say their plan is to start on time, there are ways they could adjust if circumstances force them to do otherwise.
Remarkable, the complexity of all of that in the scheduling. But you see it there. They're ready to go. And you mentioned the Buccaneers. That's where I want to start this morning, because Tampa, with Tom Brady, has 5 primetime games on the schedule. And their head coach, Bruce Arians, is excited about the expectations.
Well, I love it. You know, I love the expectations and the excitement that brings. I think our players will enjoy it. And you know, as coaches, you have to embrace it and get ready for it. And, you know, I think our guys are going to be really, really excited about the season.
So, several things of note on the Bucs schedule involving Tom Brady. The first note you see there, I think, is outstandingly good news. 0 cold weather games in the months of November and December for the warm weather team and the aging quarterback. They also have a very late bye, week 13. That's the latest Tom Brady team has ever had a bye since 2001. And then the bad news at the bottom, 4 games this season on short rest. And as you see, Brady has never had more than 3.
in a season. So, Lewis Riddick, let me come to you here. As you look at that, what jumps out to you as far as the scheduling for Brady and the Bucks?
Yeah, I think right off the bat, Greeny, the fact that they have, you know, two divisional games back-to-back, the Saints and the Carolina Panthers, going down to New Orleans, starting off, you know, in that environment with an offense that really won't be able to get together during the offseason, and Tom Brady trying to get on the same page with his guys. Look, they could not have put them in a tougher position as far as starting the season off. And we talk about, hey, well, were division games going to be later in the year? Well, not for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. And then they play against some very good defenses as well. They play against the Denver Broncos, who are going to have Von Miller and Bradley Chubb is returning. They play against the Los Angeles Chargers, who have Joey Bosa, Melvin Ingram. So right off the bat, this new offense in particular, which is going to be, you know, the point of debate for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers early in the season, just how quickly can the offense get on the same page? They're going to be faced. They're going to face some stiff competition and be put to the fire right away, which is something that you figure, hey, look, if you, you know, you get all those primetime games, you have all these expectations, you have people talking about Tampa Bay as being a Super Bowl favorite. Well, we're going to find out, because they're going to have to face the fire and go through the fire right away, right off the beginning.
Absolutely. Mike Tannenbaum, though, that's the beginning. The end, I think, bodes very well for them. And you were down there in Miami. You know the warm weather teams and the impact of that. Brady got no cold weather games. How big a deal do you think that is?
Oh, that's really big. He talked about that. That's one of the reasons he signed with Tampa Bay. And Lewis Ray touched on it. When you can get some of those colder weather games, or what would have been done early in the season, that really sets up well for him. They're going to need to play well down the stretch, because it's going to take them a while to get going. You go back to opening day. Think about all the years and the reps that Drew Brees and Sean Payton have had together. And now you compare that with Bruce Arians and Tom Brady. They may have a modified offseason. So going down the stretch, having those games in warm weather, they're going to have to play well. And when you think about two games against the Falcons, the Vikings, those may be critical games for them to get into the playoffs. And there's huge expectations, but it's going to be a work in progress.
Yeah, so last night with the schedule for Brady and the Bucks, sort of a Charles Dickens kind of thing, the best of times and the worst of times. We'll see how it winds up impacting them. Let me go to some other interesting things from last night. And Graziano, I'm going to come to you on this. How about travel for some of these teams? Let's see which team has to travel the most and which team has to travel the least. I can put those up on my screen for you there. The Seattle Seahawks this year will travel over 29,000 miles. And you see the Rams and Niners. It's always the West Coast teams that have the significant travel. Then look over on the right side of your screen. The Baltimore Ravens barely leave home. They could drive 6,000 miles over the course of a season and barely have it impact them. So look at the disparity in the travel there. And Ravens, Seahawks, look, those are both two teams not only thinking playoff thoughts, probably thinking Super Bowl thoughts. So, Dan Graziano, as you look at those numbers, what jumps out to you?
What jumps out to me, Greeny, is the Seahawks they love going east and playing long-distance games. They're very good at it. Since 2012, the year Russell Wilson was drafted, Seattle has the highest winning percentage of any team in the league in road games played in the Eastern time zone. They're 21-9, including 6-0 last year. This is a point of pride in the Seahawks organization. Pete Carroll has talked about the program they put in place to monitor things like sleep and hydration and make sure that the players are prepared to fly across the country and play in the time zone far away. They even won a Super Bowl, Greeny, way back when in New Jersey. So a lot of travel for the Seahawks, but they don't hate that.
And Lewis, I also look at the back end of Baltimore's schedule. Not only do the Ravens have the fewest miles to travel this year, but they finish with the Jaguars, the Giants, and the Bengals. And obviously, we never know how good or bad anybody is going to be. But that looks like a pretty light schedule at the finish. Feels like the Ravens had a good night last night, Lewis. What do you think?
Yeah, there's no question about that. And when you're able to finish the season against teams that, you know, what you are projected to be, considering the fact that this is a team that is going to come into a season with very, very high expectations, and deservedly so. I mean, that's exactly how, when you're looking at it from a front office and from a coaching and a player standpoint, that's exactly how you want your schedule to look. Look, this team is loaded for bear. There's no question about that. Eric DaCosta has done a tremendous job. They have added to some of their strengths, particularly, you know, on the offensive side of the ball with their draft picks. They have really fortified their defense. Look, the Ravens are set up for a run here. They're going to have a showdown, obviously, week three against the Kansas City Chiefs. That is going to be maybe one of the most watched games of the entire year on Monday Night Football. But this is a football team that schedule sets up very nicely. They get to sit at home. They don't have to spend too much time on airplanes. I mean, it's really looking good for Coach Harbaugh and his squad.
No question. Then the next one I want to get to here, and Mike Tannenbaum, I will start with you. John Gruden and the Las Vegas Raiders. Again, they will open the new era of Las Vegas football week two. at home on Monday Night Football. But look at this. They have 6 1:00 Eastern time games. That is the most for any team that plays in the Pacific time zone ever. No team has ever had to come east and play that early spot as many times as the Raiders will this year. Mike Tannenbaum, how significant is that for John Gruden's team?
That's really significant, Greeny, and here's why. Their body clocks, those are 10 a.m. games. When we were on the East Coast, we loved playing the teams that went west to east. I'm sure John Gruden's going to start traveling maybe on Thursday night, the latest on Friday, to get those teams, their body clocks ready to go. Because if you think about it, these are world-class athletes that used to perform at 1, 4, 7 o'clock at night. They're not at their best at 10 a.m. That could be a huge disadvantage for them as the season goes on.
And Dan Graziano, with the NFL going to Las Vegas, I noticed they have 4 primetime games at home. So obviously the league is showcasing this new team, this new stadium, and this new city.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see. Obviously, we don't know at this point whether there will be fans in the stadiums this season, how many fans will be allowed in stadiums, if any. So the idea of the new stadiums being shown off is one that's probably for the cameras, right? Look how beautiful the new stadium in Los Angeles is. Look how beautiful the stadium in Las Vegas is. The fact that those teams have home games early shows you that they want to show those places off and that they're not overly worried about the potential for construction delays in those places this summer.
And then one more I want to get to here, and this is one that Mike Tannenbaum pointed out for us here. The Kansas City Chiefs, of course, they opened the season, and they are actually the biggest favorite of week one on that Thursday night against the Texans. But the defending Super Bowl champs did not get any favors because, Mike, you were pointing out weeks 2 and week 3. Boy, that's a lot of travel for that team on completely opposite ends of the country.
That's right, Green. And let's look at those defenses, starting with the Chargers. When you think about Joey Bosa, Melvin Ingram, they're getting Derwin James back, and they signed Chris Harris and drafted Kenneth Murray. That's going to be a really, really good defense. They travel back to Kansas City. They're there for 4 or 5 days, and they have to go all the way east. Lewis already touched on it. They added Calais Campbell. They drafted Patrick Queen to the third-ranked defense in Baltimore. So all eyes are on opening day in Kansas City on that Thursday. But the next 2 weeks, those are great defenses. They're 3,000 miles apart. That's a really tough stretch early in the season for the Kansas City Chiefs.
And very quickly, Lewis, they're also the only team in the NFL with 4 sets of back-to-back road games this year. What'd you think of Kansas City's schedule?
Yeah, they're not making it easy on the defending champions, are they? I mean, they're right smack in the middle of the country. So, you know, whenever they play these coastal teams, it's like boomerang, and they're going from one end to the other, and they're playing against defenses that are going to really be designed to get after their quarterback. But, hey, nothing comes easy when you're the champs, and I don't think Andy Reid would have it any other way.
It was a very interesting night. The NFL schedule is out. We have a lot more analysis of it as we go. But coming up next, Jim Harbaugh made a proposal yesterday that turned a lot of heads. It could fundamentally change college football, and I think he's got a point. We're going to get to that. And then later this morning, he faced Michael Jordan for years. What does Shaq think about The Last Dance and what it's revealing about the great MJ? We'll ask him when he joins us live this morning here, Get Up on ESPN.
Geico knows there are many reasons why you ride, from the camaraderie of the other bikers, a band of brothers always there for you rain or shine, to the amazing savings you get with Geico on your motorcycle insurance and accessories coverage all year round. But for Bucky Hornhill, it was one reason in particular.
It was my helmet hair. I was born with helmet hair. I've tried to cut it a bunch of times, even buzzing it, but it immediately just goes back to helmet hair.
Geico Motorcycle. 15 minutes could save you 15% or more.
Foot odor throwing you off your game? Stick to a winning game plan with Odor Eaters, featuring 3 advanced odor and wetness fighters. The lineup provides long-lasting odor control plus more to keep your feet on their game.
Odor Eaters powder provides outstanding moisture control. Clear drying spray is the MVP in preventing athlete's foot, while insoles work continuously to manage wetness while adding a layer of comfort. Pick up today at Walmart, Target, CVS, Dollar General, or other fine retailers.
Odor Eaters. Destroy foot odor with the best in odor defense.
Get Up is brought to you by Disney Plus. All of your favorites, all in one place. Sign up today. All right, this is very interesting. Yesterday, Michigan head coach Jim Harbaugh put out an open letter to the college football community calling for college football players to have the ability to enter the NFL draft whenever they're ready, as opposed to the 3-year rule that currently exists, and to allow players who go unselected in the draft to return to school. We'll make some of this required reading. This is a part of the letter. He wrote, there are early bloomers capable of competing in the NFL and earning a livelihood at an earlier age. The goal would be to create a scenario that makes adjustments for all current and future student athletes that puts the timeline for transition to professional football at their discretion and that of their family. So we have got Laura Rutledge and John Vilma with Mike Tannenbaum here to break this down. And so, Laura, there's really two pieces to that. There's the idea of letting the players go early, which is one thing. But then the idea of letting them come back to school if it doesn't work out might be the most important part of this.
Yeah, and Greeny, for a long time, I've heard many college football coaches talk about wanting that to be a reality, saying that sometimes guys get bad advice or things happen in the lead up to the draft or even during the draft that change their situation. And so if they are undrafted, they should get a chance to go back to school, continue to work on their craft. The interesting thing about all of that is, what does it do to scholarships? And in talking to a college football coach yesterday, he brought that up. How do you handle that with an incoming recruiting class and trying to make sure that your numbers are aligned? That becomes complicated, but either way, that part of Harbaugh's proposal has been floating around for a while. A lot of people in favor of that. Another thing in all of this that I think is really important for all of us to look at is, this does eliminate the double standard that is in place a lot of times in college football. So often we talk about, well, that coach just got to up and leave and he's making all this money and all of that, and he's got control of what he's doing and these football players don't have control. Well, this gives them much more control. But as we all know, that factors in for the top tier players. And there's a trickle down effect that can sometimes be very detrimental to those guys that might not benefit from this. So that's key. Another thing that I thought of that I think is really important here, imagine if Tua Tagovailoa was somebody who was eligible to go to the draft when he was ready, which some would have argued would have been a couple of years ago. He, Greeny, would not have been injured probably, at least not at the college level, and wouldn't have suffered the injuries that did ultimately affect him and probably affected his chance to be the number one overall pick. So it's fascinating to think about how history could be changed even at this point if this rule was already in place.
Yeah, Trevor Lawrence might already be in the NFL if the circumstances were there. John Vilma, as a former player, what do you think of it all?
I like the first part of what Jim Harbaugh said. I like that the players should be able to go and they should capitalize on their success early on. You just mentioned Trevor Lawrence. He was the hottest thing since sliced bread after he won the national title, possibly, arguably, a number one pick at the time. So, yes, he should go and capitalize on that because he would be making some money right now and still performing and playing football. The second part, though, I don't agree with at all. This is the part where they're allowed to come back if they don't get drafted. Look, there is a process that the college players are allowed to go through to see and test the waters if they are NFL ready. And they can go right before they do anything illegal that permits them from playing college football another year. They can actually fill out a report, send it into the NFL, and the NFL will scout them, watch the film, and let them know, hey, you are going to be, if you leave early, you are going to be a first-round pick, a mid-round pick, a late-round pick. They'll tell you your pros. They'll tell you your cons. They'll tell you what you need to work on for the next season if you choose to stay. So if you have this ability to go and get the free report from the NFL, they give it to you, send it back, and they give you the feedback, now it's up to you. This is now a grown man's decision to decide if you're going to leave or stay, and you should not have that kind of do-over card where it's like, oh, well, I left. I ignored everybody, frankly, because the report probably said that you're going to be a mid to late round pick. I ignored everyone. And because I ignored everyone, I'm going to now take up a scholarship of an incoming freshman that has the potential to be better than whatever I am at the time. No, I don't agree with that at all. If you leave, you leave. That's it.
That analysis that you're talking about, John, is done by a committee of people around the National Football League. And Mike Tannenbaum, you were on that committee. Tell us how that works.
Yeah, and I agree with John in part and disagree in others, because he's right. There's evaluations, there's reports written, but there's two things that we don't know when those reports are written. One are the intangibles. We don't have time to go back and look at talk to the support staff, find out about character, selflessness, ability to learn, and also, very importantly, medical. And here's a great example. Tyler Biadasz, the very talented center from Wisconsin, he comes out early. Some medical issues that were out there about him. He drops to the fourth round. He's a first-round talent. He may start for the Cowboys. Then there's another set of examples. Jacob Fromm, he comes out, great background. He drops all the way down to the fifth round. He'd be obviously benefit by going back. So those two mechanisms about the two factors of not having the intangibles and the medical are hugely different in April than they are in January. And then again, there's the Jacob Froms of the world that when they fall, if they have a chance to go back and develop for another year, they would benefit from that.
Laura, super quick. I got like 20 seconds here, but the rule wouldn't necessarily have to be that the school that the player was at has to take the player back, right? The player could just have eligibility, it seems to me. And if another school wants them, they can have them.
And that's why this is so fascinating to these college football coaches in the world of the transfer portal. They're going to try to say, how can we get as much talent at our university as possible? And that's one thing that this would do. Of course, it creates a Pandora's box ripple effect that we can all agree would open up a lot of eyeballs.
Boy, there's so much there. I'd leave it to Jim Harbaugh to bring this up at all. Of all times right now. We'll have much more on this as we go, but we have a very special guest standing by and ready to go. The UFC is back tomorrow. How ready are they for their full card? How will it be different? Dana White joins us with the answers live next. Get up on ESPN.
Though we're apart these days, we're sharing more. So at Geico, we'd like to say thanks. Thanks for sharing your savage dance moves. Thanks for sharing your DIY haircut fails. Thanks for sharing your inner lip sync star. Now it's our turn to share with the Geico Give Back, a 15% credit on car and motorcycle policies for current and new customers. Because we're committed for the long haul, the 15% credit lasts your full policy term. Visit geico.com/giveback for more info and eligibility.
Obviously, everybody knows that the Khabib fight fell out. But if you look at Tony Ferguson versus Justin Gaethje, it's a ridiculous fight.
Oh, God, with a raw overhead right. Oh, that's it. Tony Ferguson. Big right from Gaethje.
He's a brilliant madman.
Holy smoke, Justin Gaethje has the power.
MMA was defined by a fight like me and Tony Ferguson.
Tomorrow night is the night, and the card is loaded for UFC 249, set for Jacksonville, Florida. And there he is, the president of UFC, Dana White, is back with us. And Dana, well, we've talked about this multiple times. This is an event that you have worked so hard to get together. How would you describe the challenges of making this weekend happen?
It was, obviously different than anything I've ever experienced before. But I've had fun building this card and getting this event together. I'm excited for Saturday, and I'm ready to do this.
I'm sure a lot of fans and people around the country want to hear about the safety precautions that you have taken. What could you tell us about what will be different to ensure the health and safety of everybody involved?
Well, like I've been saying, health and safety is something that we worry about every weekend, not just with the coronavirus, but obviously, no fans. Less than half the team that usually works on an event will be working on this event. There's been multiple testing of the athletes. If you look on, a lot of their Instagram and social media, they're getting the thing stuck up their nose and doing the antibody testing and, a lot of things that we don't normally do for a fight.
All right. And so, yeah, we had Dominic on yesterday talking about some of that. And so with all of that as ensured as it can be under the circumstances, there are huge names on this card. What can fans expect to see tomorrow night?
Listen, as a promoter, you can never guarantee that a fight is going to be, an incredible fight or the best fight you've ever seen. I guarantee you the main event is going to be insane. Stylistically, the way these two match up and as far as their mentality goes, this fight is going to be one of the best fights of the year. Very tough fight to call. Who's going to win? You cannot miss this main event. And the entire card is stacked from the first fight of the night to the main event. It should be an amazing night of fights.
Yeah, the main event, as you see there, is Ferguson and Gaethje, but you're also going to get to see Henry Cejudo and Dominic Cruz and a lot of other really big matchups. Now, I came across a quote as I was looking into this yesterday where you told Sports Illustrated that you're aiming to return to Vegas. How soon do you think that might happen, and why is it so important?
This month. Well, we built a $100 million facility next door so we could have fights. And, it makes more sense with what's going on for us to be doing the events at our own arena. It'll be a lot safer for, my employees, the athletic commission, the fighters. So, I hope to have fights there this month.
Am I looking at you as here best I can when they open up your shot? Are you wearing a TB12 shirt?
I'm not only wearing a TB12, it's a TB12 Tampa Bay shirt.
How excited? Okay, well, listen, his schedule came out last night. You got a quick thought. What do you expect Tom to do down there in Tampa?
You know, I love the guy. Huge fan. So I'm hoping he's very successful. And, you know, he's coming to Vegas. I own a box at Raider Stadium, so I definitely won't be rooting for the Raiders.
Okay, fair enough. They will open Las Vegas on ESPN the second week of the season. One last thing I want to ask you, because we've had a lot of chances to talk during all of this and through long before the pandemic began. This has been so important to you to get this together and to get it happening now. How would you describe what your emotions are right now a day before it finally does?
I feel good. You know, today's the weigh-ins. I always get excited for weigh-ins. It's my second favorite day. And, you know, I'm excited to get this fight behind me and you know, start next week. We have a fight, you know, Wednesday and Saturday, too, of next week. So I'm excited to get the schedule going, get live sports back for people, and prove to the world that this can be done safely.
All right, Dana, good luck. I'm glad for you that you were able to get it done. We're looking forward to seeing it tomorrow night. Thank you very much. Good luck. We'll see you soon.
Thank you, buddy. I appreciate it.
All right, that's Dana White, president UFC, and tomorrow night it's UFC 249 live, and the card is stacked. You heard him talking about it. Ferguson and Gaethje for the interim lightweight championship. Henry Cejudo defending his bantamweight title against Dominic Cruz. The prelims start at 6 Eastern on ESPN and ESPN Deportes. To order the main card in both English and Spanish, go to ESPNplus.com/PPV. I heard him talking about Tom Brady. Let's go back to the NFL schedule release, and Caesars Sportsbook has released the opening lines for week one. And here were a few that jumped out to me. The biggest number of the weekend is actually the very first game, that Thursday night. It isn't even a weekend. It's Houston at Kansas City. The Chiefs at home are a 10.5-point favorite. Green Bay at Minnesota, two teams that we figure will be battling it out at the top of the NFC North. Aaron Rodgers on the road is a 3.5-point dog. And then, of course, Tampa Bay at New Orleans. The Saints, a 4.5-point favorite with Breeze against Brady for the first of what will be two meetings this season and the first ever matchup of quarterbacks who are older than 40. Lewis is back with me here, and Bobby Carpenter joins the conversation. So, Bobby, let's talk about that one in particular. Bucks and Saints, obviously, so many storylines. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, Greeny, when you look at this, I think there's this perception that there's this massive home field advantage when you look at the New Orleans Saints. And you know what? I think that there probably is over the course of an entire season. But what's unbelievable is I went back and looked at this, and the Saints, they're only 1-4 in their last five home openers, with the last two losses coming against, guess who else? The Bucks, and then the Pats with Tom Brady. And so that's a big piece of it right there. I think obviously the Bucks are going to start fast. And then one other schedule note, everybody's making a big deal about the late bye week with Tom Brady and the fact that they don't have any cold weather games late in the year. Tell you this, I grew up in Columbus, Ohio. I played at Ohio State. When I was in Dallas, I always scoured the schedule to see, not just for me, but where we were going, because you're a warm weather team and you don't necessarily want to be playing those games late in December, in January, and late November up in the Northeast. It's just not great for you. And the week 13 bye week could come into play more important than people know, because if there's only one bye week with the number one seed in the playoffs, that could kind of give Tom some rest late should they not get the number one seed.
That's an interesting way of looking at it. Lewis, I'm really fascinated by the late schedule, because actually if you project out the weather, and you never know with these things, the coldest weather game that the Buccaneers are projected to play would be in Carolina in early November. So that part of it really did seem to fall well for him.
Yeah, no question about that. And I think Bobby makes a good point. When you have a week 13 bye, you really have a chance at that point to really assess where you're at. And then you have a four-game push, right? You have a four-game push that you really have to make a run there. And what better way, if you're Tom Brady, then to either play at home in Tampa or play in dome stadiums when you're on the road. So really, you have ideal conditions. You have a late bye where you can assess where are we at and what do we need to do. You have a chance to recharge both physically and mentally. I think, you know, quite honestly, look, if you can believe in these kind of things, I think the league wants Tampa Bay and they want Tom to really succeed this year. They want Tampa Bay to really be one of those teams that are playing for it all here late in the season, and they want people engaged with this football team, and the schedule is set up for them to do that. I mean, to have a bye that late, look, if you can survive those first couple of weeks, the first three quarters of the season, and get to that bye, recharge, get some people healthy, and then make that push in ideal conditions, I mean, that's a great way to set it up now. But I will say this, the beginning of the season, it's a haul. It's a haul for them to go that long without having any kind of break. But we'll see. We'll see how it goes. But the late season schedule, set up exactly how you would want.
They also have the maximum 5 primetime games, including in the middle of the season, Bobby, 3 in a row, 3 consecutive night games. Does that have any impact on a team playing that many games at night?
It can, especially when you're a little bit older. It's, you know, where are those games? Are they home? Are they on the road? What's the travel situation like? We used to play a ton of primetime games when I was in Dallas. We'd go to New York. You'd go to Washington. You're going to Philadelphia. You have to fly back. It can take its toll on you. Let's face it. Tom Brady's played a ton of primetime games throughout his career. Rob Gronkowski is. These are the leaders of that offense. They have a veteran coaching staff. Those guys are going to be able to handle it because it's really going to be on Bruce Arians, how you manage the preparation during the week, being able to get your teams ready, coming off short rest or potentially, you know, a difficult long night and a long flight.
And super quick thought for you, Lewis, here, just on one of those other games there, the Packers and the Vikings. That's a critical game. Week 1, Minnesota at home, a slim favorite. It, two teams that figure to battle it out for that division.
Yeah, look, I think Minnesota is primed right now to take advantage of the Green Bay Packers and actually, and leapfrog them and go ahead and win that division. I think this team is set up. The offensive line comes back intact. Kirk Cousins signs a contract extension. You know, they have some weapons on offense that really, really fit well with what Gary Kubiak is going to want to do. They change the defense around a little bit, have a new defensive coordinator, revamp the secondary, have one of the best second level sets of linebackers. And then for the Packers, look, it's kind of really status quo for them. It's really about Aaron Rodgers running the offense through the run game then to Aaron Rodgers and not giving him any more help. Look, the defense really is going to be the side of the ball that's going to have to make the difference for the Green Bay Packers, because for the offense, I mean, you tell me where they really improved other than the fact that Aaron is just going to have to play out of his mind. That's why I think things lead towards Minnesota. We'll see if they can finally now get over the hump.
The really important division game right off the bat. It is great to have a full-scale football Friday with us here in the middle of May. Meanwhile, we have baseball going on the other side of the world. How about KBO action? Korea Baseball Organization. It was just wrapping up on ESPN2. The Kia Tigers, the Samsung Lions. That's a name you may remember. Tyler Saladino, the former Brewer, crushes that to left. The cheerleaders love it. Take another look at Saladino. Here's a little celebration. That's a tremendous swing. The bat flip needs some work. Saladino will get the silent treatment in the dugout afterwards. And again, after this one was over, he got a little silent treatment there. The Lions, it gets finished up. 5-0, the final score. More Korea baseball for you tomorrow morning, 3:55 a.m. Eastern on ESPN2 and on the ESPN app. The LG Twins taking on the NC Dinos. Enjoy. All right, coming up, Alabama's athletic director made a comment yesterday about college football that you need to hear, because it could be the clearest sign yet of a changing landscape in the sport. You'll hear it right after this. Get up, ESPN.
Geico knows there are many reasons why you ride. From the camaraderie of the other bikers, a band of brothers, always there for you, rain or shine, to the amazing savings you get with Geico on your motorcycle insurance and accessories coverage all year round. But for Bucky Hornhill, it was one reason in particular.
It was my helmet hair. I was born with helmet hair. I've tried to cut it a bunch of times, even buzzing it, but it immediately just goes back to helmet hair.
Geico Motorcycle. 15 minutes could save you 15% or more.
Back on Get Up with sneaky big news. The governor of the state of Oregon, Kate Brown, announced yesterday that large gatherings in the state, including sporting events, should be either canceled or significantly modified through September because of the pandemic. Oregon State and Oregon football would, of course, both be impacted by that. The Ducks have 3 home football games in September, including one against Ohio State. Now, the commissioner of the conference, the Pac-12, is Larry Scott. He told ESPN, quote, "I'm not necessarily surprised, but I guess my reaction is we're going to learn a lot more between now and September. So a statement someone makes in May about what's going to happen in September, it seems to me, is a very long ways away, and there's a lot more for everyone to learn between now and then." Meanwhile, on the other side of the country, I want you to hear what the Alabama athletic director, Greg Byrne, told Laura about the possibility of opening in the fall.
I don't think it's going to be realistic if the expectation is that everybody has to start at the same time. What it looks like in New York, where there's a dense population, right, may be different than what it looks like here in Alabama or Nebraska or Texas, where it's more spread out. And each state, each region of the country has to do what they think is right for them and their situation. I think for the good of the overall enterprise of what sports is, there needs to be an openness to saying it may not all be at the exact same time.
Fascinating. So, Laura, that's your interview you did yesterday. And again, first we have a big football coach saying that the other day, and now here's the athletic director at maybe the most significant football program in the country coming out and saying that. What should we take from that?
I think what we take is that these are very real conversations that we kind of thought were happening and we've heard were happening, but now we know for sure they are happening. And even yesterday, Alabama's athletic director, Greg Byrne, was in a meeting with the football oversight committee with Mark Emmert, the NCAA president. Many things were discussed, including these contingency plans, which may include seeing some states be able to return to these types of gatherings sooner than others. And it's like we continue to say, if you see a conference that has, let's say, eight teams in their conference in certain states that are able to return to action, you may see them return to action and not have the other couple or maybe more states in the conference be able to play football and other fall sports. The other thing that I thought was really interesting in talking to Greg Byrne is they are planning right now to have football season basically as normal, starting on time in the fall with fans in the stands there at Bryant-Denny Stadium, over 100,000 fans at capacity there. They're planning for that to be what this looks like. And he even said right now on their campus, they have students there on campus because a lot of them actually live there and they've already returned back. These are not student athletes, but just as it relates to the conversation around having students and maybe not having athletes there or either or, this is all something that's going to continue to develop. And I'll reiterate once more that through all of this, they all keep saying from the college football and college sports in the fall side of things that they have time on their side. He also pointed out that toward the end of May, early June is still that timeline for making decisions about the summer and then, of course, the fall.
All right, so there are 11 different states in the SEC. There are 11 different states represented, Bobby, in your conference in the Big Ten. You're there in Columbus, obviously, played at Ohio State. You do the talk show there. What do you think of this idea, again, that it sounds like here are big voices saying, hey, if we can play, we're going to play. And the schools who can't, then they're not going to.
I think it started with James Franklin when he talked about this earlier this week, how he basically echoed the same thing where, you know, if you can play and you're in our conference, we're going to try to move on with or without you. And it's kind of the sad reality. You wish that wasn't the case because you'd like to see everybody sit there and move together. But these conference commissioners, they're trying to balance, you know, making some schools happy while maybe some schools, other schools are upset. And, you know, I feel for Larry Scott in the Pac-12. He's trying to keep pace, you know, with the Big Ten and obviously Greg Sankey down at the SEC because everyone down there seems to be gung-ho moving forward. And then you have the Oregon governor coming out saying, well, you know, we probably won't have football with fans in the fall. Coincidentally, Oregon, their big non-conference game is probably one of the biggest in the country when Ohio State goes there in September. And so if there's no fans in the stands, you lose your home field advantage for some of these big non-conference games should they occur.
John Vilma, we haven't had a chance to chat with you since all of this started going. You played for one of the legendary college football programs of all time, and you cover the sport for us. What are your thoughts on the idea that we could get to a place where there are some schools playing and some that can't, even within the same conference?
Well, the first thing we have to recognize is that we're talking about student athletes, and this is not the NFL or the NBA. So if the schools are open, then yes, the school athletes, the student athletes should be able to play. So that's the first thing when Alabama, the AD talks about, you know, having football games and preparing for it. It's because the universities are preparing to open school on time. And if you have the students in there, then the student athletes should be able to do what they got their scholarship for. So I don't have any issues with anything that the AD is talking about because I understand that it's coming from a thoughtful perspective where the school and the athletes, the athletic department are speaking together. If they do that and the schools are open, then yes, they should play and they should prepare. Not every state is the same as New York and the Northeast. So if you can play and you're available, then go ahead.
Very quickly, John, because we haven't had a chance to ask you this question. That's in the event that the schools are open. There are also conversations about maybe the regular students, if you will, aren't on campus, but the football team would still try to play. Would you be okay with that?
I would be okay with that. I look at the seniors that have prepared for their final year, I'm okay with that. No problems at all.
Okay, fair enough. Well, I have to leave it there, but we're going to come back to this because I've got Field Yates standing by, and you don't keep Field Yates waiting. There are very few hard, fast rules in life, but that's one of them. The NFL schedule was released last night, and the Patriots, they got a very tough schedule. They have the hardest one-loss schedule based upon last season of any team in the league, and last night they got the maximum five prime-time games, so the league does expect to see good things from them. You see it here. The Buccaneers have five primetime games. You got some interesting matchups there. Monday Night Football's the best schedule that we've had, I think, that since it came to ESPN many years ago. And then again, we focus here on the Patriots, who got five primetime games, which is the max. And here's Field Yates standing by, because when the schedule is out, that means fantasy football is right around the corner. So let's run the hurry up here, Field. Who are the two players that benefit most from the way the schedule played out last night?
Yeah, I think beginning with a couple of breakout candidates, Greeny, how about Deebo Samuel, the 49ers, who I think is in for a monster second season. He had 57 catches as a rookie last year. He scored in four of his final six regular season games. He was a factor in the playoffs. And if you look at the 49ers schedule, it begins with the Cardinals, the Jets and Giants, the Eagles, and then the Dolphins. None of those secondaries scare me going forward for this year. I think that he's in a big, huge spot for opportunity this upcoming year. Now, a quarterback, and there's lots of depth at quarterback that I think has a chance to start strong, is that's right, Gardner Minshew, assuming he is the starter, of course, in Jacksonville. Minshew mania could return. Last year, including that game which he came off the bench in week one, he had at least 16 fantasy points in seven of his first eight games. Jay Gruden, the new offensive coordinator, has yet to meet a passing play he did not like. And I love their first six games leading into their bye, which takes place in week seven. Minshew mania is back. Now, the Cardinals acquired DeAndre Hopkins this offseason, as we all know. And I love the way their schedule shapes up after week one. They play the 49ers in the opener, who they actually played tough last year, but we should see great things for Kyler Murray and DeAndre Hopkins. As I previously told you, Greeny, I think Kyler Murray could be the third best quarterback in fantasy this season. And DeAndre Hopkins, there's never any worries about that guy. He's good for 1,000 yards and 100 catches every year. But on the other side of the coin is DeAndre Hopkins' old team, which is the Texans, who I think they have the most difficult schedule in the first quarter of the season in the entire NFL. They get the Chiefs, the Ravens, the Steelers, and the Vikings. So if you invest in David Johnson and the early returns are not great for fantasy football, Greeny, remember, it's a long season. Patience pays off. Same thing goes for Deshaun Watson, but with Deshaun, the floor is so high. You have to expect good things for him over the course of the season.
There's never a bad time to talk fantasy football with Field Yates. Good to see you, my man. We'll check in again. Meanwhile, coming up here this morning, don't miss Shaquille O'Neal live. He bridged the Michael Jordan and LeBron James eras. He's got all kinds of thoughts, and he'll join us less than an hour from right now here. Get Up ESPN.